I trade freight services in association with Who1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Dr. Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Dr. Who podcast, episode 254. I'm back. And
front and sides too.
And I thought of a quote earlier on that slipped my mind, so I'm going to leave it to Mr. Kirby Bartlett-Sloan.
You're asking me to believe that your caravan can defy the passage of the sun, move not merely from one place to another, but from today into tomorrow, today into yesterday? No, Ian, that I cannot accept.
And Mary Lang.
Kublai Khan is the mightiest man in the world. Oh, is the mightiest man the world has ever seen. Not to pay him homage will cost you your head.
Oh, my gout. Anyway, right.
Now, isn't that...
Was that your quote? Now,
yes.
Now, isn't that interesting?
Hmm? Yeah. Okay, right, this we're going to be looking at...
It is truly paradise today.
Thank you, Kirby. We're going to be looking at...
Don't panic!
All right, shall I just explain before you start, while you're interrupting me? It's like having Alicia back on the show. That Debbie has lost a voice. A terrible excuse not to do a podcast, but she has indeed lost a voice. I have been in negotiations to try to get her to come on to prove that she's lost a voice, but I don't quite know how that would work in an audio presentation, but we can only try.
She could whisper.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's probably what she'd be doing anyway.
Yeah.
Be sounding like an ice warrior.
Debbie. Yeah.
Anyway, and a sea devil, in fact.
Yes.
Right, this week we're going to be looking at Marco Polo, and because I'm not really...
Marco!
Shut up, able to, you know, watch the episode on screen whilst I review it, I'm going to have to do it by memory, and because obviously it's a very unusual
you
way of watching the story.
You should have let me know, I could have gotten a copy too.
Oh dear, never mind. Right, so episode one more or less consisted of... the TARDIS crew landing in a very cold place, the roof of the world, in fact, and then very quickly meeting up with Tigana and then Marco Polo, who stopped.
Too bad they weren't on the Isle of Wight. Then they could have found some shingles.
Yeah, and they sort of end up being sort of taken in by Marco Polo, Peaching and all his friends in their little caravan. Very nice little caravan, isn't it? A sort of forced to go on the journey with them. I can't remember how the TARDIS is picked up and becomes part of that. And I can't remember also who managed to let it slip that the TARDIS might take flight somehow. Whoever
they,
it was.
They saw it materialise.
Oh, they saw it materialise. Oh, I missed that bit. Thank you, Kirby, because I did miss that bit while I was trying to...
Pay attention.
I was trying to work out a way of watching it using my Apple TV and using the iPad that was playing it to the Apple TV as a thing to write questions with. Did you know how that was quite awkward to work out? I did eventually work out how to do it. But as we went through the story, I found different ways of actually watching it. And by the time I got to episode 7, realised that all I really needed to do is go on the Apple TV, go to Daily Motion and watch it that way. So it's a bit of a kerfuffle.
I don't get Daily Motion on my Apple TV.
Well, you're not looking. It's on there. Well, it is on mine anyway.
What Apple TV even allows you to do. All I did was I found it on YouTube and I downloaded it.
I didn't download it. I found some of it on YouTube. This is all the loose canon reconstructions.
Yeah, right.
A lot of which has been pointlessly colorized, but didn't detract from the enjoyment of the story, I hasten to point out. But
no, it didn't bother me.
Didn't really see the need for it to be colorized. But, so I watched some on YouTube, the Loose Cannon website I tried to get into. That was a bit awkward. And there was another place that had them listed that you could sort of download them. If you could see the screen on the iPad, but the Mac wouldn't display the, or maybe it was just Google Chrome, I don't know, wouldn't display the page. Like I said, at the last minute, because I was obviously feeding, just Apple, airplaying it through the Apple TV and the iPad, I just... was just browsing the icons, the Apple TV, and saw Daily Motion there. I thought, oh, right, Daily Motion, Doctor Who, Marco Polo, and up came the list of episodes, went down to episode 7, play, and it played it all the way from the beginning. And they had a few little bonus features on that as well, which I really enjoyed. I'll talk about those later.
Oh, I'd like to have some of those bonus features.
Oh, yeah,
features.
I'll give you a hint about the bonus features, a specific bonus feature of Mark Eden continues the story and then does a little history lesson on Marco Polo.
Oh, those, yeah. You saw that, okay, I saw those, yeah.
Okay,
well, oh, I need feature. To find those. Because
he does a little intro to the story, doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a little, he basically, it's him playing Marco Polo, an older version of Marco Polo at the end of his journey.
Master?
At the end of his journal writing, yes.
Master, I've heard, dealing with the Omni rumor, that one part of the Omni rumor says that they have got Marco Polo, but there's a possibility that a still alive member of the cast is wanting
royalties.
Royalties. I won't necessarily say who that member is, except
Mark
may
Eden?
Have just mentioned his name recently.
Who,
yes.
Who mentioned his name?
Mark Eden.
All of us. Mark Eden, yes. Okay. There's the possibility that that's the reason why they're sitting on it.
Oh.
Anyway, back to Marco Polo. So, yeah, that's basically what episode one is. They sort of, you meet all the characters in the story. Not all of. Yes?
Master. I find that interesting. I'm not necessarily going to believe that because he was very eager to have that fairly large part in an adventure in space and time as the head of BBC.
Yeah.
So.
It's an Omni rumor. Doesn't mean to say it's right, does it?
Right.
It depends on if he has bills to pay, I suppose.
Yeah. Anyway, moving back to Marco Polo. That's basically what episode one is. You meet all the characters and they sort of embark on this, what was God knows how long a journey. I'd like to have known how long they're actually with Marco Polo, but it would have been probably about a year.
As much traveling as they did.
Yeah. So they start embarking. You see the little trail across the map as they move on along the story. The map changes style depending on what version of the reconstruction you're watching.
Also, the map has anachronisms in it.
Does it?
Because the... At the time of Marco Polo, the Great Wall wasn't nearly the extent that it is as it got later on during, I believe, the Ming, which was hundreds of years later. And also the Great Wall is being represented on that map with this crenellation, like you would think of the Great Wall looking now, or actually during the time when the way that it looks now was being constructed, and it wasn't. Even though there were walls, they were basically earthen walls. So there's that. They've got some cities in the wrong places. They've got other things. But other things, they're absolutely dead on with their history, which really...
Now, would you think the average British family in 1964 would sit there and go, oh, that isn't how the Great Wall looks now?
No, but I'm me.
Anyway.
Yes.
Back to the story. So let's go back to where we were, because we're getting a bit muddled here, right? So excuse me, I've got a burp coming. I haven't drunk anything fizzy. It was only a quiet one, so you got away with that. So obviously, I said earlier when we met Tagana, which then reminded me of my original quote. I was going to say Braveheart Tagana.
Oh, yeah. That was good.
I do forget that about
was that good.
One. Sorry about that. Yes, and he's obviously brilliantly played. Who's the actor that plays him? Debbie? Oh, she's not here.
Darren Nesbitt.
He's very good at playing sinister characters. He did appear in Doctor Who later on. I'm sure
a lot of people in this appeared in Doctor Who later on.
Mm.
Including,
I have to say, he's not bad looking.
Thank you for that. Well, but what about the actor that played Tagana? You are talking about the actor that.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
So he's not bad looking.
I thought we were talking about Master. Me. Sorry. Yes?
Master. Xenia Merton, who played Ping Cho, didn't appear again in Doctor Who, but
until
she did appear
recently.
Excuse me?
Oh, sorry, I thought you were going to say she did appear very recently, but yes, she was in Sarah Jane Adventures, yes.
Sarah Jane Adventures, which I thought was really, really cool.
Mm. She still looks pretty good for her age, could be said.
Apparently she was in Space 1999, but I didn't ever watch.
Yeah, I'm sure she was. She's got one of those faces. Anyway, back to this episode. We haven't got past episode one yet, and I haven't even said anything about it. Right, so, like I say, T'Ghana is obviously quite sinister straight away, and I think we find out in episode one that he is trying to kill Marco. Well, he tries to poison him, doesn't he, at some point during this, later on in the story. But Marco trusts him. Shut up. Trusts him implicitly, stupid man.
I don't understand why he trusts him.
Anyway, and Marco also gets it into his head that the Doctor's TARDIS will he can nick it off the Doctor and give it to the Kublai Khan, or whatever he's called, and be allowed to leave for Venice. But what about the Doctor and his friends? Where are they supposed to? I think it's very selfish of Marco.
Well, no, Marco keeps saying that he doesn't see any problem with taking them back. Taking the Doctor and company back to Venice, and then they can find their way home from there.
Yeah, how lovely.
He doesn't understand the whole time travel bit.
Mm, okay. Anyway.
And I don't necessarily think that Marco trusts T'Ghana. He just knows that he has to bring him to the Kublai Khan's court. Yeah. He's been charged with doing that.
Anyway, like I said, T'Ghana, and he said Tegan, buys a poison for the caravan's water supply, and as it ventures towards the Gobi Desert, episode two, the Singing Sands. Mm-hmm. Is this the one, I think, where Ping Cho and Susan get caught in a sandstorm?
Sandstorm,
yeah, they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was quite interesting watching that as a reconstruction.
Yeah.
Not really much they could show, apart from just a sort of swirling sand or whatever. So anyway,
and the Doctor is notably absent through this episode.
But then he appears. I thought he was going to be a Doctor no less episode, and then he does appear towards the end of it. Yeah, because he's not very well. He's suffering from altitude sickness, apparently. That's why he's in his bed a lot. Of course, they start running out of water because T'Ghana has slashed all the water and tipped it away or whatever, and they've got hardly any left, and they have to ration it, and they're struggling, and they know there's an oasis somewhere in the desert, but that's often frequented by bandits.
And then we get our science lesson about condensation in the TARDIS.
Yes.
Quite a lot of condensation. Deb's got Deb's got this machine that you sort of switch on, and it sucks all the moisture off the window. It does fill up quite a lot, but I don't know if it would have been enough. Would have been a lot of windows
to keep them going
to feed
for
all
five
of them.
Days.
And besides, I would have thought the water would be a little bit on the rank side, especially off the walls of the TARDIS. Where,
the TARDIS is a big place. Why didn't they just use a swimming pool?
Why didn't they just go to the machine and get some water out there? Food replicator, whatever it's called.
The producers hadn't thought about a swimming pool being in there yet.
Yes. They did notice also that T'Ghana sort of spoke in the same sort of tone in every way. Whatever is tipping water away or being Marco's friend.
Because he's the bad guy.
it's interesting how still nobody makes any comment about how they're all understanding Chinese.
Yes.
It's just, everyone's got posh accents and we're just moving right along.
Now, do you think the average British family in 1964 would turn to one another and go, Ma, don't you wonder why they're all speaking English?
Yeah. Well, that's only a modern concept. This thing never really considered, when Star Trek was on. They're in alien worlds in Star Trek, yet everybody was able to understand each other. In the original series, at least. But then they brought in a communication system where the little badge that they were wearing actually translated what the alien was saying. I'm sorry, but I'm right.
No, you're not. And do you want me to to prove it. The Universal Translator was introduced very early on.
Mm. Not at the beginning. Ah, right. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm not sure exactly when, but I am sure I can.
We're not talking about entirely about Star Trek at the moment. That was a reference. It doesn't mean to say you've got to go into the history of Star Trek. That's the Bigger on the Inside podcast. Who did that? Who we've nicked this idea of actually travelling through the history of Doctor Who. It was their idea, sort of. Anyway, right, so we're on to episode 3, which is called 500 Eyes. And because this part of the story is quite slow moving in some ways, because they're just basically travelling.
Many parts of the story are...
No, please, look, I can't afford for your audio to go funny today, because there's not enough people for me to laugh with you about it. I mean, laugh at me.
Breaking up
your share. Or you can do your "Do you believe in life after love?" Come on. He's gone now completely. Oh, it's just you and me, Mary.
No, I'm not.
Dropping like flies.
Hello.
If you want to carry on, I will go and find out if anyone is causing problems out there.
You can do, but you're sort of back again now.
You sound okay.
Yeah,
I
was also...
it was probably because I was opening up.
Shut up! Right, I'm just going to have to kill the dog. Shut up! Open the door.
Yeah, but how long
does
it take you to...
Oh, obviously long door? Enough for you to let the dog bark for about half an hour.
You can just walk to the door.
Well, you've got a key.
Well, I saw you were there. You could just walk to the door.
How did you see? Well, there's a smoked window. You can't see through. All you would have seen is a light on and a barking dog. Anyway.
Yeah, it sounds like they... First of all, I was opening up the Memory Alpha... Star Trek wiki, and it sounds like they established the Universal Translator.
Mary, did I not say to him?
In the cage and where no man has gone before.
Yeah. Mary?
Yes?
Did I not say to him that we're not going to go down the Star Trek road, that we'll just move back to Marco Polo?
I do recall that, yes. Yes, I do.
Anyway, right, so in 500 Eyes, there was a bit where they referenced the Aladdin, as they called it, and the Hashashin, obviously Aladdin and the assassins. I love the way that they Ian became the school teacher again at that particular moment. And they go to the Cave of 500 Eyes, which is quite a spooky cave, because they've got these murals on the walls and there's sorts of screaming going on, well, especially from Barbara, who... very naughtily goes there. And then she gets sort of taken, doesn't she, by some people.
This is the first of many stories that Barbara likes to go on her own and then gets captured. So you think she'd learn.
And, of course, that sort of leads to the rest of them going down to the rescuer, more or less. So that's basically what that episode's about. The Wall of Lies... it says Marco, Ian, and Tagana arrive at the cave after being tipped off, by Chen Chu. Barbara is rescued after Ian discovers secret room. When the party returns to the caravan, Tagana tries another tactic. He tries to make Marco suspicious by telling him that Susan has an unhealthy hold over Ping Shou, and that the doctor has a second key to the TARDIS. Got 7 of them, apparently, but not they didn't know that in those days. This is countered when...
And whatever happened to the key that's behind the sign above
indeed.
The door?
Have we established yet that there is one?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
This is countered when Barbara states that she was only in danger as she followed Tagana to the cave, but Tagana flatly denies ever having seen... ever having been there before.
Yes.
Marco stamps his authority on the caravan by separating Ping Chou and Susan, making them ever more suspicious of Tagana. At the next way station, Tagana's plans are bolstered when he proves to Marco and the Doctor has a second key to the TARDIS. That's that, the doctor. Oh, God's sake. Sorry. I haven't been drinking any alcohol because apparently if I have got glandular fever, I can't drink alcohol. It's very dangerous. So just in case I have, I'm not drinking it. Hang on. Oh. That's orange squash. Made by Robinson's, Kirby. It's a British company. That
how about some nice squash. Tea?
Well known at Wembley. Wembley? Wimbledon. Right then.
Yes, Marco catches the doctor coming out of the TARDIS.
Yes.
Marco, yeah, Polo seizes the key and tries to go in, but the doctor warns him the ship will be destroyed if an unauthorized person enters it. I've never heard that one before, have you?
No. Well, it's a bluff anyway.
Yeah. He is taken away and held under guard. The caravan now catches sight of the Great Wall of Cathay. Is that not the Great Wall of China? The route turns south to...
Yeah, like I said, there is one, but it doesn't look like we think of it now.
Oh, I see. Route turns south to Lanzhou along the banks of the River Yellow, or even the Yellow River. And then the next town, Hsinchu. Tegana meets with Akomat and tells him to attack the caravan two nights later as they journey through the bamboo forest. Everyone is to be killed. Akomat.
Master?
Yes.
Master?
Yes.
I actually did some... I was questioning their geography there for a little bit while watching this episode. So I went off and did some research because I couldn't quite believe that there was bamboo that far north. And, yep, there are bamboo forests in that area.
Because that's so, really important.
Yes, it is.
Right.
You
to the average
understand.
Family... In 1964, they yeah. need to know that, yes.
Absolutely. I'm not being funny, but Mr. Lucarossi, who wrote this story, is very thorough and obviously very keen on this particular subject. And
yes,
I think he was
yes,
quite keen on being as yeah. accurate as possible, bless him. The only thing he did miss out on that would have made some impact on the story was the lack of Marco Polo's father, who probably would have been there on this particular journey.
Yes.
Anyway, back to the story. Everyone is to be killed. Akomat goes to wait in the jungle for Tegana's signal to attack. To escape from Polo, Ian cuts through the tent and avoids the guard. He plans to knock the guard. His plan is to knock out the guard and allow the others to escape. However, when he reaches the front of the tent, he discovers the guard is already dead.
Yes.
Right. Ooh, he's getting better.
Rider from Shang-Tu. Unwilling to leave Polo and his party to their fate, Ian alerts them to the oncoming danger. He wakes Polo, who wakes Tegana, and they begin to arm themselves. Ian decides it would be best to frighten off the attacking bandits by throwing bamboo into the fire to explode noisily. Again, that's a bit of a science lesson thing, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
When the bandits attack...
It makes me want to experiment with that.
Does it? Okay. And when the bandits attack, Akomat is slain by Tegana as he is on the point of exposing him. The other bandits flee in fear. In thanks for their help and defeating the bandit attack, Marco Polo allows Susan and Peng Cho to share company again. I wonder what they get up to, eh? once more, hermits of
two
others.
Two teenage girls,
yes,
no.
to walk freely again. The Doctor and his companions have worked out that Tegana is the source of many of the journey's troubles, but cannot make Marco Polo realise
no,
how dangerous
really?
He is. A new traveller arrives at the caravan, a message rider named Ling Tao. He has travelled from Shang-Tu, 300 miles away, in just 24 hours. That's quite a thing, because he's got a very fast horse. Obviously, changing a horse every 3 miles, apparently. He bears a message commanding mm-hmm. the caravan to speed up. So Marco orders that once they reach the city of Chengding, and the travellers shall all take to horseback while the TARDIS and the other belongings are brought on later. As ever, Tegana has another plot at the next way station. He meets an ally called Kuiju, was it? Kuiju, I can't remember
yeah,
how to pronounce
Kuiju,
it.
Yeah, Kuiju, yeah.
And bribes him to try and steal the TARDIS while the convoy is split up.
Master.
And hang on, let me finish the sentence and take it to Karakoram, where Nogai's troops are massing. Yes, Kirby.
Master. Yes, and this guy who happens to have a monkey on his shoulder and an eye patch probably stowed away on the TARDIS and ended up in 1936 to menace Indiana Jones.
Ping Cho now knows where Marco has hidden the two keys.
Master. Yeah, I posted that joke 3 weeks ago on Facebook.
Yes. Yes, sir.
But also, the interesting thing is that the actor who plays the guy with the eye patch was in Indiana Jones as the soothsayer who Indy goes to. He's the guy who translates the eye of the Staff of Ra headpiece.
Yeah,
where the monkey eats the date and dies. Same actor.
Okay, thank you for that.
You know, one little sidelight that I read about is that this monkey that they used was particularly bad-tempered and didn't like when people would, you know, touch it or approach it or do anything near it. And its way of venting, whenever it would get all irritated, it would be to urinate. So I guess the actors had to deal with, you know, doing scenes with this monkey sometimes urinating on them.
Wow, where are you getting this information? Yeah. Okay.
Thank you,
Mary. Mary wins the quiz.
Right. Later that night, the Doctor and his companions sneak out to return to the TARDIS and escape. But Susan returns to say goodbye to Ping Cho, the stupid girl, and they can't escape, so we have to put up another couple of episodes. Right.
Yeah.
This is Mighty Kublai Khan, which is the next episode. Ian leaves the TARDIS to convince T'Ghana to free Susan. T'Ghana orders the others out of the TARDIS and frees Susan only when the Doctor returns the TARDIS key to Polo. Ian takes the blame on himself for stealing the TARDIS key to save Ping Cho. As the journey enters its final phases, Ian tries to ingratiate himself with Marco Polo again by telling him the truth about the TARDIS. Marco does not believe that the TARDIS can move through time and says he knows Ian to be a liar, as he has deduced that Ian did not steal the key. It was Ping Cho after all. Ping Cho hears this, and fearing detection, she flees the caravan. On finding her missing, T'Ghana and Ian go off to look for her. Polo says that Ian should go, as when they meet Kublai Khan, T'Ghana should be there. Ian finds her back at Cheng Ting, having ridden there alone, which is just as well. While there, he uncovers the fact that Quiji has stolen the TARDIS from a second convoy. Back with Polo.
I would say that guy's name is Quiju.
Probably is. I said Quiji, didn't I?
Yes.
Because I've been a bit Quiji.
There's not too many names in the quiz because these names are hard to remember.
Yeah,
and that guy, who was trying to, Ping Cho was talking to, is kind of like the head of the station there, the way station.
Yeah.
Is the only real, almost racist characterization that I saw during this entire thing.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the only one who really seemed to be doing the
not understand the difference between Japanese and Chinese sort of thing.
Well, no, just it was an over the top, not very nice Ching Chong sort of.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's a good point. I didn't actually notice that. But, you know,
everybody else. I mean, this is all what they similar to with Talents of Wing Chiang. Everyone's it's all basically white people
there
Chinese
are a couple
makeup.
Of Oriental people in the
right,
in the
but
story.
But it's all respectful.
Hmm. Yeah,
except for this one guy.
Yeah. Anyway, they believe Ping Cho should not marry a man so senior to her. This provokes Polo to send T'Ghana after Ian to ensure that he does not try to liberate Ping Cho and make off with the TARDIS. Eventually, Polo's party arrives at the Kublai Khan's palace. The Doctor initially shows belligerence towards Khan, but they soon bond over great ages and maladies that ensue before the
maladies.
Yeah, thank you. Maladies, yes. Before Khan and the Doctor go off together, Khan tells Polo that the soldiers are swelling around their borders, so it would appear that T'Ghana's information has been incorrect. Khan awaits the great warrior's return. When Ian and Ping Cho find out the bandit on the road to Karakoram, they force him to admit the truth, but then T'Ghana arrives and threatens to king kill king, kill Ping Zhou. There's a lot of these ings and stuff. It's easy to add one superfluous one to a word that you don't need to add it to. Right, last episode was called Assassin at Peking. We could all work out where that was before the episode started. The standoff between
Ian and his master.
Yes.
As I pointed out, this story is set in 1289, and Beijing, as the letters P-E-K-I-N-G are supposed to be pronounced, Beijing, did not exist and did not have that name. It didn't get that name, and it didn't get a name with north, that's the Bay part, until 1368, and didn't become Beijing until 1403. During Marco Polo's time, it was either Dadu, Grand Capital, or Khan Balik, the city of the Khan.
Okay, right. The standoff between Ian and Tagana is broken when Ling Tao and a band of soldiers arrive. They kill Quiju. Oh, I still said it wrong. Quiju.
Quiju.
Quiju, yeah.
But yet again. Yeah. But yet
no,
again.
No, like I said, he snuck into the TARDIS at that point.
But yet again, Tagana talks his way out of a tight situation. The entire party agrees to ride on to the Imperial Palace in Peking during a standoff.
Beijing.
It says Peking here. During
no, but if you look at how, if you find a pronunciation guide for the Wade Giles transliteration of Chinese, P-E is Bay. K-I-N-J.
Am I supposed to, I'm going to say Peking because that's what they said in the story. Mary, help.
Okay. I just wondered how long this Chinese lesson was going to continue.
During the standoff, expecting Ian and Ping Cho to be killed, Tagana pledges his allegiance to Nogai. Meanwhile, at the capital city... Thank you. The Khan engages the Doctor in a game of backgammon. The Doctor wins 35 elephants, 4,000 white stallions, 25 tigers, the sacred tooth of Buddha... and the entire commerce of Burma for a year, but wagers all of this on the liberation of his TARDIS and loses.
And loses, yeah.
The Khan,
it's a nice twist.
Yeah. The Khan presses, and the way he laughs about it afterwards is quite funny. And they can't work out why he's laughing. The Khan presses Marco for the... That's the sort of thing that a modern doctor would do as well after in a situation which I quite like.
In the face of that, yeah.
The Khan presses Marco for the history of the Magic Caravan. The emissary admits he was wrong to try to obtain the vehicle, but only did it by his freedom. Khan was not impressed. He warns Marco if he does not regain his trust, he will be banished from the court. When Tagana returns to court, he convinces Khan that Polo has been defying the laws of the land by not confiscating the TARDIS and slaying the Doctor and his companions when they try to steal it back. Ian and Ping Cho, now the dog wants to get in.
Want the dog to come in? Really?
Ian and Ping Cho tell Khan that Tagana stated he is working for Nogai. Khan is not sure whether to believe them. He says he must be judged in a matter of the court. Nevertheless, events take a turn for the better for the others. Ping Cho is spared the loveless marriage when she learns the elderly man she was to marry has passed away after drinking the elixir of life, which is quite ironic, isn't it?
Well, actually, there were attempts, like the first emperor...
It's probably had loads of mercury in it.
Yeah, the first emperor of China probably killed himself in a similar manner, exactly. Which is where the idea, at least I got the idea that they got that from.
He died after drinking the elixir of life and offered the chance to return to Samarkand. Yeah. She instead chooses to remain with the Khan's court in Peking. Shut up. The Doctor and his companions, now imprisoned, decide someone has to stop Tagana. They believe he's going to kill Khan and create an easy victory for Nogai's army. They attack their guard, break free. They meet Polo and tell him of their theory. Polo immediately runs to the throne room. Tagana has slain Khan's guards as well as Grand Vizier, or Vizier, whatever it's called. When he tried to protect the Khan...
The word is Vizier.
Oh, vizier, yeah.
Like brazier.
Okay, the grand vizier, when he's trying to protect the Khan, and is moving in for the kill when the doctor and his allies arrive. Tagana is struck by a lengthy sword fight with Polo, which is quite interesting and funny to watch in the reconstruction, because she's just flashing the same pictures over and over again.
Yes!
Noise with the sword. His mission failed.
I sure wish they would find this and restore it.
Yeah.
I want to see this.
Yeah. Tagana takes his own life with a spear rather than to be killed by Khan's men. As the bodies are removed, Marco Polo hurriedly gives the doctor and his party the key to the TARDIS and bids them escape. Wish he'd done that at the beginning of the story. I'm only joking. The caravan fades away before the eyes of Khan and his courtiers, and Khan forgives Marco Polo and implies that he will be permitted to return to Venice. As Polo wonders where the Doctor and his companions are now, an image of the time traveler standing around the TARDIS console is shown superimposed against a starscape. Right, okay, we got there. Right, so Marco Polo, right.
Seven episodes, wow.
It was seven episodes, but even in this particular medium, and the medium of audio and photographic reconstruction, mm-hmm. this was so compelling, this story.
Yeah.
It was, you can tell how beautiful it would have been if it, you know, even in black and white to be able to watch it properly. The music was lovely. The performance is amazing. It's just, yeah, it was thoroughly enjoyable story, really. And obviously John Lucarotti wrote it, and he was an extremely good writer. And this and obviously his next story will sort of underline that. It was probably a little bit
long.
What
was his next one?
Aztecs.
Aztecs,
oh,
yeah.
Of course, duh. Wow.
It was a little bit long, but like I say, if you're watching this week by week, you would have been really into this particular mm-hmm. tale.
Absolutely.
And you wouldn't have been waiting for it to end. You would have just been enjoying, oh, where are they now? What, you know, who are they going to meet now? Where, you know, just being in that sort of ancient China. Well, it's not really ancient China. It's medieval China, really, isn't it? That sort of atmosphere and everything. So, it's great. It's really, really good. I'm so pleased that I got to watch it like this. So, it was a bit awkward trying to find episodes online to watch, but once they were there and on the machine, and I was able to watch them on the telly. So, very, very good. Loved it. What do you think, Kirby?
Oh, absolutely fantastic. I remember years ago when I was reading through various books and stuff that were telling about the story, I'm going, boy, that sounds boring, particularly with synopsis which say things like the doctor gets the key, the doctor loses the key, the doctor gets the key, the doctor loses the key. I'm going, good grief, how can they extend this to seven episodes? And when watching it, you're just sucked right in. And as kind of an amateur Chinese historian, like I said, I had very few problems with it historically, and it just looked gorgeous, and the story was compelling, and oh boy, do I wish they would really find this and restore it properly so we can see it in its glory.
Mm, absolutely. Mary?
Well, I've got a lot to say about it.
Good.
Oh. One is how much I agree with you, Adam. This has been so lovingly done, the costumes and the music and Lucarotti's script are just so wonderful. This is something that I think could be done today and be fascinating. They probably wouldn't do it in as many episodes, but... It's just so wonderful, and I wish that not just that they could find and put it out, you know, the way it's supposed to be, but I wish more people would be motivated to even look at it as it is now, because this is what the early Doctor Who is kind of at its peak, I think, is like this. And it embodies what the early Doctor Who was intended to be. As they travel along, we're getting history lessons. I know you have a few things to quibble with, Kirby, but basically, this is a whole area of the world and history that I think very few people have been exposed to before. So
I didn't have that many problems with it. Okay. My problems are nitpicky.
Yeah, which is good. I think people in the 1960s just were not that aware of China and its history. And
right. And
we've heard names, you know, Marco Polo and Kublai Khan and all that. But this was so interesting to meet the people. And I know it's fictional, but, you know, it's still fun to meet the people. And there were science lessons involved in this, too. We learned about condensation. We learned about, you know, the explosive power of bamboo. Those kind of things going on, I thought, is what the early intention was for Doctor Who, was to be educational as well as adventurous. And even though this is taking place on Earth, I find, particularly in the episode The Singing Sands, we were in an environment so alien to anything that anyone would have thought about in the 1960s or even now, when you are trapped in an alien environment and unable to leave your tent or wherever you are because of that sound of the sands, you know, hissing and hitting the tents and all that. To me, we could have been on the moon or we could have been anywhere. It felt that alien. My own Earth did. And the fact that we look at these stories as stories of this many episodes and that many episodes. So we kind of groan when we look at something like, oh my gosh, it's 6 episodes. Oh, it's 7 episodes. But when you look at it the way they did then, a point that you were making, Kirby, is that to the people at home, they were just watching, because each episode had its own title, that they were just on a continuous adventure with these people and the doctor. So they had no idea, like, when the story was really going to end. Because even, what is it, episode 5, when our travelers are all ready to leave and they're all happy and they're going to get out of there. But then, oh, my goodness, where's Susan? You know, people probably thought the story was going to end with that 5th episode, but it didn't.
Yeah.
It's, you know, they had more to go. And then each episode ends, each story episode ends with them starting off on their next adventure. So for the family at home, every one of these is just the next weekly episode that are later, you know, gathered into stories as we look at them now. And the last thing I have to say that I find very, very interesting about this is that this is a story not told from the viewpoint of the travelers, but the viewpoint of Marco Polo. So our travelers, in how he even catches them in lies or in subterfuge as the doctor, you know, tries to sneak out of the TARDIS and he catches him. This is all seen from his eyes so that his own Tegana isn't any more trustworthy than these 4 strangers that he came across. So I love the fact that he, my goodness, what's going on?
Oh, can you hear that?
Yeah.
Good. I'm getting ready. Carry on.
Okay.
But you're ready for what?
Yeah, for
world domination.
Oh, you'll find out.
But I love the fact that this is told from another character's viewpoint, so that our travelers look just as suspicious and untrustworthy as who we are seeing as the bad guy. You know, so I think Marco Polo must have wondered about everybody around him. Nobody is trustworthy.
Yeah.
So, yep, that's what I have to say.
Thank you very much.
I loved it. Mary. Absolutely loved it.
Yes. What a treat. It's quite good fun, this journey business, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, if one thing I loved watching Keys of Marinus, I started watching that again last night, and Ian keeps wearing his costume from Marco Polo. At least he's got it on for the first episode of Keys of Marinus, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. Anyway,
looking at the costume, even that Barbara was wearing in Marco Polo, I wondered why she didn't continue to wear it because it was lovely on her.
Yes, it was. Right, we've got some feedback.
Beep.
Jeff Waddle, I do honestly think the BBC have this, and I bet you it's in mint condition. 7 episodes of Hartnell goodness, but as with some of the early stories, it's probably a couple of episodes too long. The colour picks of the show make this look very opulent and colourful. Well, it would do, because they're colour. Ah. Which, let's face it, is what the BBC was best at back then, and still is now, to be fair.
Still is.
Period wise.
Absolutely.
Amazing wardrobe mm-hmm. they have, you know. Mm-hmm. But how much is wasted on being black and white? We will find out. I don't think it matters. From what I've seen in the photos, obviously you see the pictures, you know that it's going to be slightly better quality, a moving version of that. And I do hope they have.
Well, and I also read that after Loose Cannon put this together, Lucarati himself found a whole bunch of more pictures in his attic that he had forgotten about.
All right.
So there's even more pictures, and so I think another. If we can't have the real thing, it'd be nice for someone else
another
to put
reconstruction,
together another
yeah.
reconstruction and using all the available photos.
Yeah.
Waris Hussein, who directed most of the episodes, also had a large collection of pictures.
Oh, then it was okay. It wasn't Lucarati. It was Waris Hussein. You're right.
Yes, Waris Hussein.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, he's the one who had the photos. Yeah.
Back to Jeff. I don't think there's a lot. To this story, it reminds me of a kind of poorer Crusades with a doctor and companions just trying to get the hell out of there while trying to interfere as little as possible. The story is quite straightforward, but it will depend on the performances whether this holds up to being the classic everyone thinks it is. I do, however, find it strange that the novel, and I'm guessing the show, has no reference to Kublai Khan's sister, Shaka. There you go. Thanks, Jeff.
Oh, Jeff.
Oh. That was quite good. Anyway, got some feedback from Andy Nunny.
Well, good afternoon, Twiggy Megabyteers. It's Andy Nunny. It's 3:44 on Sunday afternoon, sitting here with a bottle of Lucozade Pink Lemonade. So I've just done a 5.6-mile training run and I'm sitting in my towel having a shower. Anyway, Adam, sorry you're not well, mate. So hope you get well soon. And it should be a double episode next week, but I thought I'd get this out of the way first. What's better? Anyway, Marco Polo. Now, I think we're spoiled in the way we watch Marco Polo because this one is seen over a six-week period, being seven episodes, one episode a week, whereas we've all watched it in basically, you know, in 1 week flat. And the continuity, we've been able to pick it up and run it straight through. I think it works because each episode is in a way self-contained and you can sit and look at it and understand what's going on within that six episode. But if you put it all together as we've done, you actually find that there is a lot of repetition. It's Doctor and crew trying to escape, Marco Polo bringing them back, Tagana bringing them back. So in a way, it's that point of view, it's quite repetitive. But you wouldn't know that if you'd watched it, as I said, over a six-week period, one episode at a time, and not a chance to go back and re-watch it and rethink it. But I still think it works very well. I mean, it is it's a very slow-paced one. I mean, you call it slow-moving. In fact, you probably call it non-moving, as I believe Kirby said last week, because I watched the Loose Cannon reconstruction, the colourised photographs. We had a bit of action beginning with the snowball coming in, and then, of course, it was just all pictures. But it still works. So what you've got is, obviously, the pictures, a lot of them. You've got the original dialogue, which cleaned up does work quite well. There's one or two places where it is a bit indistinct, I have to try and work out. And it helps with occasional subtitles, just putting some action sequence together, saying, you know, this is what Ian does, what Doctor does. Because you can't pick it up from the dialogue and the still pictures. But what is interesting, it's a power thing, isn't it? Because you've got the Doctor is actually completely out of control. Sorry, he's not in control, shall we say. He's not worried because he knows that because of the time they're in, no one actually do anything. I mean, even if they got the key off him, well, they've never got the TARDIS open, and if they'd forced him to open the TARDIS, they'd all got the TARDIS, and he'd taken them off somewhere else, and that would have been it. He'd been back in control. So in a way, he knew he couldn't lose. I think he knew that really deep down. He didn't really perhaps want to let it on because he likes to have the air of mystery. Whether Susan knew it, whether Ian and Barbara knew it as well. And it's interesting about the way Marco Polo came round to the end of it, and also Kublai Khan came round to it, understood that this is something that he could, you know, he's intelligent enough. I mean, a man who conquered half the world, well, the known world then, and I suppose you call it the civilised world, he knew that this is something that was beyond him, and he couldn't do it. That I think that's a mark of a true leader, is knowing how far you can go and where you need to stop and whether you can actually go on further. I mean, if you go into late 19th century history with Bismarck, who was the founder of really the modern Germany, only wanted Europe, he wasn't interested in Africa because he knew he couldn't control it. The bigger you got, the more out of control it would get. So he focused on what you could do. And then Kublai Khan was the same. He knew this was something that was out of understanding. He couldn't do anything with, so let it go.
Mm. Let it go. Let it go.
Oh, that's better. You've got this character, Marco Polo, and he's fascinating, because this is the first one. Oh, there's a Facebook entry, I don't know what that says.
It's
the first time you've got a character who actually is a real person, and who has got some history, and it's fascinating to see how the way he works, because he's desperate to go home. He's been away, as we found out later, when he saw the Mark Eden piece, he's been away for 17 years, and so, yeah, I mean, 17 years away from your family. I'm not sure if he had a wife or not. Well, he did, didn't he? But whether he met her before or after. But 17 years away. I mean, crikey, that mm-hmm. is a long, long time. You can understand why he was taking us home, and he saw this as a way of taking him home. And you saw with Khan himself, I said, a man who was a really powerful man, coming to the end of his life, knew what his limitations were, but was politically astute enough to want to bargain with Nogi for it. How that works, I don't know. I haven't had a chance to go back and look around. I'm sure probably Kirby probably knows, because Kirby, smarty pants, knows everything, don't you?
Yes.
Let's make Kirby.
Oh, yes. Knows.
And then you've got the rest of the court. You've got the rather wet girl who's going to be married off to a guy who died. I thought the Kublai Khan's queen. Well, how's your phrase with queen here, Blackhand? My God, she sounded just like her. She really did. And so, ungrateful witch, your husband just died once he got about 80. And, yeah, she's one of them.
She was on the very famous 17. Episode of Fawlty Towers.
Which wouldn't last much longer. I mean, probably the first night. You should have probably done him in anyway, bit of rampant as you do, and that would have done him in good and proper, and should have actually inherited it. She didn't really think that went through very well, but hey, that's life, isn't it? But it's amazing. This is almost like a two-part story, the first one being the first 5 to 6 episodes of getting them to the court, and the last one the intrigue within the court of what's going on. And that's why it's slow-paced for the first 6 episodes, and the last one really doesn't move very fast with all political intrigue going on. But I think as a character study, it works very well. It'd be fascinating to see what the costume like. I know you see some of the, there's another Facebook post, some of the colourised stories, and you see it. But apparently, even though it was in black and white, they filmed in colour, so that actually you'll get the contrast on screen, which I didn't know. I read that or heard that recently. Might be Kirby again, for all I know.
Probably.
But anyway, I think this is a very good story. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And as I said, Adam, get well soon. Be seeing you.
Yes, thank you. Andy, I obviously would rather never get ill again would probably be a better... Yes?
Yeah, besides, we're referring to Claire Davenport. You were saying she was in Fawlty Towers?
Yeah, the sort of... she was in an episode of Fawlty Towers. I'm not too sure...
I'm not seeing that, but one thing she was...
In that? I've not seen... Do you believe in love after love?
Master?
Yes?
Can you... understand me.
Sort of. It's just quite funny.
Return of the Jedi as the fat slave dancer in Jabba's palace.
Yes, but I'm pretty sure she was in Fawlty Towers as well. What did you say her name was? Hello?
Claire Davenport.
Claire Davenport. I'll do a Google for you. So I'm going to do something that you normally do, just to save you the bother. Right, so, nothing to do with Doctor Who anymore. Claire Davenport.
Oh, yes, she was in Doctor Who, therefore it has to do with Doctor Who.
Yes. Davenport. Fawlty.
Yes.
Towers. Yes, Kirby. Oh, I spelled Fawlty wrong. Yes, she was in Fawlty Towers. Fawlty.
Fawlty Towers.
With a W there and there. Fawlty Towers. There. Claire Davenport. Fawlty Towers. Yeah, she's got a blonde wig in Fawlty Towers. What episode is she in? So I've got to try and find out.
I'm sure I
thought it was the Germans. No, what? Not the Germans. Yes?
I'm not sure because my internet connection is getting really bad.
Yes, I can hear.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. So is yours, Mary. Oh, my God.
Mine too?
Yes, we've all gone a bit faint. Strange. Fange? Not my abilities to speak. Gone a bit strange. Yeah, okay. We've got some more feedback. I don't know what this is, because it's extra feedback from Dawn and Andy. So I'm just going to play it and hope there's something interesting.
Well, good afternoon, 20 Megabytes, and you're here. It's 3:49 on Sunday afternoon, and I've got a glass of Sauvignon Blanc. Cheers. Ah, well, that's nice. Be seeing you.
Yes. That does sound nice.
Yeah. Oh, I think that was today.
Do you? Well, he did say so. Nothing from Ian Kirk, unfortunately.
Yes, there is.
Oh, well, there is on Facebook.
Oh, would you mind? Because I can't find it.
Well, no, he's got bits of, he's got like music cues and such, so he must have sent it to you.
What's it for? Because I haven't got it.
Marco Polo. No. It says this is my script for the 27th January / 1st February / 8th February.
Yeah. I haven't got it. I haven't got it, unfortunately. So hang on, what's this back here?
Hello, 20 Minute Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. In Stephen Moffat's first story as showrunner, The 11th Hour, little Amelia prays to Santa Claus. In Last Christmas, he finally shows up. He took his sweet time. A new 11-part drama called Fortitude is to be shown on UK cable channel Sky Atlantic, also in the USA and other countries. It is about life in a remote town in the frozen north. Starts Thursday, the 29th of January. There are three of the cast who have appeared in Doctor Who: Christopher Eccleston, the Ninth Doctor, Jessica Raine, Verity Lambert in An Adventure in Space and Time, and Emma Grayling in Hyde, and Michael Gambon, Kazran Sardik in A Christmas Carol. Marco Polo by John Lucarotti. The Doctor is the most feeble of the TARDIS crew in this story. He is ill with altitude sickness, and later collapses from lack of water. The TARDIS is broken and has been confiscated. At the end of 7 episodes, the Doctor has finished repairing it and is given the key back. There are a couple of instances of regular characters being captured and then escaping. Early Doctor Who was intended to have educational trips to historical events and fantastical adventures in the future. Barbara is a history teacher who can explain past events for the viewers. Here we meet the European explorer Marco Polo and Chinese Emperor Kublai Khan. There's a bit of melodrama at the end, with the hero and villain having a sword fight. It was a good story, but the pace in those days was quite slow. Barbara's hair seems to have fared quite well on the journey across China. Bye for now.
Hello there, this is Colin Baker, and you are listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. And doesn't make... I'll do it again.
Kirby Bartlett Sloan, no, that's you, isn't it?
Maybe.
Ian Kirk. The last Ian Kirk thing I got was Edge of Destruction. So what am I going to do?
Well, we can read it, but then we don't have the music.
It's funny enough that what I would recommend is that you wait and edit it in at the end.
But I haven't got it. So how can I edit in something I haven't got?
Yeah, you can't put it in.
Yeah, you can put it in later when you receive it. Tell him we haven't got it, but we would like to put it in. Please either resend it or whatever.
Okay.
Well, he sent it an hour ago. He put it on Facebook an hour ago.
Yeah. Are you sure you don't have it? Check in your spam folder.
What? I haven't got a spam folder. This is Google.
Google has a spam folder.
There it is. Penis enlargements. your bank account has been infiltrated. Please send in your password here.
PPI. Sexy pictures.
I want to loan you $5 million. Donate here. No, there's nothing here from Ian Kirk. No.
You know, since you're on Gmail, you could do a Gmail search. Go to the top of your Gmail.
You're not convinced, even though it's in date order. And the last thing I got from him was Edge of Destruction. Oh, he's
got a search for the word fortitude.
Why?
Because that's a word in. No, I guess we wouldn't have it in
right.
This.
The most recent thing, I've got all of Ian Kirk's emails here from the beginning of time, and the last one was the 20th of January.
Well, let's ask I will post on Facebook that we haven't got the audio, and to please send it in, and we will put it in at the end, okay?
Anyway, yeah, I'm just writing to him now. Don't mind, I'm writing him direct. There we go. There we go, I sent him a message. Right, so...
I just put it on Facebook, too, so there.
There was no need to do that, because I sent him a direct message. Mary, tell him off.
Well, I'm afraid it's too late. He already did.
Okay, right. What do you think we should do now?
The quiz. Are we? Should we even bother with the quiz? Oh, no.
Said Tigana. Or Tegan. Braveheart.
I don't remember Tigana doing any evil laughing.
He sort of did. In a sort of Tigana-y way. Right then, the first question goes to Mary. Stop flicking through the pages. Who's flicking through the pages?
Debbie's hopefully we don't have any names in this.
Oh dear. Right, what desert do they travel through?
Ah, the Gobi Desert.
Oh, I've got to do me sound effect, haven't I? Right.
Yeah. Where's my ding?
Yeah. Right, Kirby.
Master?
What game does Barbara not play well?
Backgammon?
Mary, what game does Barbara not play well?
Wow, I know it's the one that the doctor's playing. No, I don't remember.
That's a bit of a shame. You didn't get that one. Chess was the answer. Right.
Oh, I was going to say chess.
You know, yeah,
I didn't remember the playing chess. I remember the backgammon at the end.
Yeah.
Master?
Yes.
I hope you saved what we've recorded so far.
Oh, damn.
Okay, whose turn
I
is it?
I think so.
It's Mary's turn, actually.
Are you recording?
Yes. Mary?
Yes.
Right. Who did Marco Polo plan to give the TARDIS to?
Kublai Khan.
Correct.
Ding.
Kirby.
Master.
What had Susan never seen at midnight?
Oh, the stars. The night sky.
Mary, what had Susan never seen at midnight?
Wow. I would have said the same thing.
You would have said the same thing. Would have been wrong. You didn't get that one. It was the moon. Mary.
Really? Are you sure?
Yeah.
Well,
I
challenge you to go through all 7 episodes again and find the bit where Susan says, I've never seen the moon at midnight. That's how she said it as well. I've never seen the moon at midnight.
No. She said, I've never seen a moonlit night. Not the moon at night.
Look, I'm not going to argue with you.
Night.
Or deduct points. She says she's never seen the moon at midnight. Right then, Mary.
Yes.
What was Susan's exclamation on seeing the midnight moon? She said one word, which were rather perplexed. Ping Cho.
I know.
I'm talking to Mary.
That one I don't know.
Well, go on then, Kirby.
Crazy, man!
That's the correct answer, right. Kirby.
Master.
Who slept through the sandstorm?
The doctor.
Correct. Mary.
He's absent in a lot of this.
Yes.
Mary.
Yes.
What made Susan scream while caught in the sandstorm?
What made her scream?
I may know. I don't know.
Don't know.
Go on in, Kirby.
That she saw Tigana.
That's for Mary. Right. What was your answer, Kirby?
I think she saw Tigana.
That is a correct answer.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure about that one.
Right, Kirby.
Master?
How did Ping Cho address Marco?
Messer Marco.
That's a correct answer. Mary.
Yes?
Why couldn't they stay camped in the desert for one day?
Their water supply was gone.
That's the correct answer. Okay. Kirby.
Master.
Why did Marco keep a journal?
Because he felt like it. I don't know.
Not quite what was in the script, Mary.
I don't know.
You didn't get that one. It's because it interests him.
Yeah, sounds a lot like Kirby's answer.
Yeah, that's my answer.
No, it's not. I worked the word interests, which was actually in it. Right, Mary.
Like the moonlit night. Okay, mm-hmm. Yes.
Right, uh-huh.
Who did Marco think sabotaged the water?
The doctor?
Kirby?
I have no eye. Bandits.
You have no eye bandits, dear. That's interesting. I don't think there are no eye bandits in it.
No, I remember it just at the very last minute.
It's the correct answer. Right, Kirby.
Master.
Where do bandits always camp, according to Marco?
Around Oasize, this is.
Oasize, yeah.
Oasize.
Yes, indeed, is the correct answer. Right, Mary.
Yes.
What is the little... I'll start that again. What is the title of episode 3?
Oh, good grief.
The Cave of 500 Eyes.
That's good enough for me. All right. Kirby.
Master.
What drug was associated with the Cave of 500 Eyes?
Hashish.
Bless you. What drug was associated with the Cave of 500
Eyes? Now, until you mentioned it, I did not... associate Aladdin with that whole thing.
You didn't. Okay. I'm sorry about that. Right. Oh. Mary?
Well, Ping Cho tells the story of Aladdin.
Mary?
Yes?
Ashashin is used today in English as what?
Marijuana?
No. Kirby?
I'm not sure where you're leading with this.
Yeah, me neither.
Ashashin is used today in English as what?
Hashish, I mean, what?
Assassins is the answer to that question.
Oh!
Okay.
Kirby.
Okay.
Who did Tigana meet...
Whose question?
You. Who did Tigana... Yeah, who did Tigana meet in the caves?
I don't remember.
Do you remember, Mary?
Barbara?
No, it was Malik. Right, Mary.
I remember Mary.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. Okay. Right,
Mary.
Yes.
What mineral ore did the doctor find in the caves?
Ooh.
Nope.
Don't remember.
Ooh. That's the name for that. Kirby?
I don't remember.
Pay attention next time. It was quartz.
Right. It's long, too.
Right. Kirby.
That's what she said. Sorry.
Kirby.
Who, me?
Yes, you.
Master.
What made Susan scream in the caves?
She saw eyes looking through one of the portraits on the wall.
That's a good enough answer. Right then, Mary.
A while since we've heard the ding.
Yes.
Mary.
Yeah.
What word did Tigana use to describe Susan to Marco in episode 4?
Ooh.
To describe Susan?
One word.
Hmm. Don't remember.
Kirby?
No, don't know.
Cunning was the answer to that question. Oh. Right, Kirby.
Master?
Lan Chao lay on the banks of what?
The Yellow River?
Is the correct answer. Mary?
I don't remember that, except you brought up the Yellow River.
Except
when we were discussing things.
Right, Mary.
Yeah.
What was Sinju nestled against?
The bamboo forest?
No. Right, Kirby.
The non-existent Great Wall.
Oh, correct. Okay.
Right, Kirby.
Master.
What did Tigana say he would let Marco...
What?
Hang on, I've got to read this out quietly to myself a bit because I don't understand the question myself.
You wrote it.
All right. How did Tigana say he would let Marco die?
I don't remember.
Mary?
No, I don't remember either.
Didn't get that one then? The answer was... Like an old woman in her bed with a stake through her heart.
Ooh. don't remember.
Would that be a porterhouse or a ribeye or what?
message from Andy Nunny. Hang on. Pause there whilst where I find out what Andy Nunny's up to. Why he's messaging me.
Hello, I'm Colin Baker. You lucky people are listening to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, the best podcast on the pod.
Mary?
Okay.
What does Marco wear of Kublai Khan? What does he wear of Kublai Khan? Something of his that Marco wears. And that is...
Wow. Well, I saw him in a tunic and a belt. And...
No, it's not that.
It's kind of a pass, a badge, a...
I'll give you a point for that. I'll give you a point. It's the gold seal of Kublai Khan. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Right. Kirby.
Are you sure it's not a sea lion?
Kirby, what was the title of episode 5?
Sorry.
No, it wasn't that.
The writer from Shang 2.
Is the correct answer. Right, Mary.
Yeah.
Where did Marco hide the TARDIS keys?
Oh, in his diary.
Well, journal, but I'll give you that
journal.
One. It's not going to be...
Yeah.
Kirby.
Master.
What is an alternative name for Cheng Ting?
Oh, I know.
Oh, good.
Give it to her, because I'm not sure. Unless it's Beijing, which
no,
it should be.
No, shut up. Mary?
It's White City.
It is White City.
Oh, okay.
Mary.
Yes?
Where did Weng Lo place the TARDIS? This is when they got to...
Where did he place it? Well, he paid Quiju to take it, but I don't know.
Yeah, but when they got to Cheng Ting, they placed the TARDIS somewhere, and that was...
I don't know.
Okay, Kirby.
Master?
Yes. Where do they place the TARDIS?
On the road to Kakorum.
No, stables was the answer to that question.
Oh, okay.
Right, Kirby.
Master?
How much did Tagana pay Quiji to move the TARDIS?
I don't know.
Oh dear. Do you know, Mary?
100 gold pieces.
Here's the correct answer. What the hell is... Oh. Right, is he?
Andy is asking if we still need people on
the podcast.
He's trying
to contact me via Skype.
Did you answer Andy?
Shut up. Let me get on with the quiz. Whose question was that one, the last one? The last one was golden pieces. Right then, so that was... So this is your question then, Mary.
Yeah.
Who claimed they stole the TARDIS key from Marco's room?
Ian claimed it.
Yes, he did. Right, Kirby.
Master?
How many years since the Crusades reached England?
I don't know.
That's
what?
Oh, I think, didn't he say like 400 years?
Nope, it's 25 years actually, but just about to welcome on live onto the show for once, it's Andy Nunny. Somewhere? It's very quiet. It's very quiet, Andy Nunny.
Have we got Andy?
We have, but he's just a bit on the quiet side.
Hello.
Oh, well, I'm sure he can hear us.
Andy? Andy?
Andy? Andy? Hang on.
Are you there?
Is your audio on?
Have you got your microphone muted? Oh, I can hear a noise.
Oh, I heard a noise. I heard a cry.
No, that's one of Mary's cats coming through the cat flap.
Not this time.
No, his Skype thing made the little blue border showing that it came from him.
Who had the last question?
Actually? Mine was the last question.
It was 25 was the answer to how many years since the Crusades reached.
Oh no!
England.
So that was Kirby. No, that was Kirby's, wasn't it? Didn't you get the question
about
how many years?
Therefore, this is your question, isn't it, Mary? The next one.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. What sits on the shoulder of Quiji's on the shoulder of Quiji's shoulder? Who writes stuff like this?
A very irritable, urinating monkey.
I can't find my pen now.
TMI.
For God's sake. I threw it at the dog and now I've lost it. Where the bloody... I'll use this pen here. This is
we've lost
podcasting
Andy.
At its very best. Hang on. I'm sure he'll say something when his microphone's working. A monkey was the answer to them. That's for that. And then I can, where's my thingy gone? And this is so slick. And I haven't done this for a few weeks. You know, it has had some impact on this thing, right?
Wait, he's gone. He's gone from the...
And he's gone.
Add him back in.
Hey?
Add him back in.
I can't add him back in. And, he's not online. Right. Oh, I've got a separate call from him now.
Oh, no. Oh, there he is.
Yeah, hello, Adam! Hello!
Don't shout. Hello. Andy, don't shout. It's all right. Hello, Andy. Hello.
big pardon. Sorry, big pardon. Hello, Adam. Hello, Mary. Hello, Kirby.
Hello, Andy.
Hello.
What a delight.
You sound so enthusiastic after being stuck in a podcast for 2 hours, Mary. It's really...
I saw your message saying you're desperate to call you, and I suddenly found you, and... Adam, well, an absolute pleasure to speak to you and to Mary and to Kirby. Well, absolute pleasure after all these years to speak to you live.
It's a bit weird, isn't it? Yes. And then when you get 4 years down the line, you end up stuck with Kirby for all that time.
Well, I must admit, I actually plugged the cables in the wrong way round. I've got the microphone case. I'm sorry about that, folks.
That's the sort of thing Kirby would do.
It's okay, Andy. We'll wear our nerves. We'll do it.
Yes? And I don't have a glass of wine. I finished my wine. I mean, after 5 weeks on the wagon, I do not have a glass of wine, so I'm going to bed soon. I've got to be up at 6 in the morning to go to work. But,
yeah, I'm supposed to be up at 6 in the morning, not to go to work, but to do some work, as in put a new floor in the bathroom down.
Oh, you've got to throw our kitchen out, please, and our bathroom.
No, I'm not a DIY person. I'm sorry. I spent all of my day off on Saturday putting up shelves and towel rails and stuff like that in the bathroom. And bearing in mind, I'm not very well at the moment, and I'm on
medication. I saw that. Glandular fever. I'm very sorry.
No, I don't think it is. I'm sorry, that might be a false alarm. I'm saying it isn't glandular fever because I'm starting to feel better, and I think if I had glandular fever, I'd still be feeling really bad. So fingers crossed I'm wrong. Now, it just feels
are
like
we going
it.
To, are we going to give Andy a couple of questions that have amounts of points?
Did you watch Marco Polo, Andy?
I watched the version with the stills. What's it called? Reconstruction. Yes, I watched that, yes.
Not being funny, yes. Mary, did you not listen to Andy's feedback earlier on in the episode?
Yeah, I
heard it.
Yes, yeah. Mary went off to make a cup of tea during that particular part.
You're right, I guess so.
Right. I was not meaning to be rude, Andy. Just hang around, because I've just got to try and finish off the quiz. Sorry,
okay.
Where did we go? Who had the last question?
It was about...
Pardon?
Throw a question or two at Andy.
I will do. I'll go back to the earlier ones you got wrong. Right, then, where did we go to?
Well, there's a lot of those.
Yes. Right, then. So the last question was about the monkey. You got that one, Mary, didn't you? So the next question, therefore, is for Kirby.
Master.
What are Kublai Khan's two great passions? One for each, 1 point for each, even.
Backgammon. I don't know.
Backgammon, I don't know. Therefore...
Yes.
Right, Mary, so what are his two great passions?
So even backgammon is not...
No, that doesn't come under this two great passions, no.
Oh, okay. Oh, there's something he offers to the doctor that they can both do. But I don't remember.
It doesn't help, really. So, Andy, what do you reckon it is? What's Kublai Khan?
Backgammon I knew because I actually played Gammon myself. And chess is the only thing I think of. I'm pretty sure he didn't play chess. So it's a game. It's going to be something stupid like patience or something like that, isn't it?
No, it's hunting and falconry.
Oh,
yeah, nothing like patience then, obviously.
Nothing any of us mentioned.
Right. Mary, Mary, what does everyone have to do as the Khan enters?
Oh, I know.
Oh, let Andy answer that one.
Why? It's irrelevant. You have a go, and if you get it wrong, then I'll give it to you.
You have to kowtow.
That's correct. Right, then, have a go, Andy.
Oh, Mary, I was going to say kowtow. Mary, I was going to say they've got a kowtow, haven't they? Because the doctor's so old, he can't do it, can he?
Beg your pardon? Oh, I see what you mean, right. Yeah, unfortunately, we're getting to the crux of the game now, so we can't mess around, Mary, at this point of the competition. There's only about 5 questions left. Kirby.
You haven't given us the score. Are you going to wait?
No, I'm not, because it's a big reveal at the end of the quiz.
Well, I'm bottom, obviously.
Right.
So whose question is this?
Yours, right. What ailment
Master?
Is... Shut up. What ailment is Kublai Khan suffering from?
I know!
Go on, Kirby.
I don't know, arthritis.
Now, hang on, Mary, before you come in. Mary, what's he suffering from?
Gout.
Is the correct answer. Right then.
Oh,
yes, you can
that's right.
You can have a go now. Andy?
Yep.
What was it?
Fucking arthritis. Mary obviously got it right. I mean, Mary got it
yes.
Fair play.
Right.
Since Effie's come on, I have this vision of this little puppy who keeps jumping up. Me, I know.
Don't worry, I'll ask you some of the earlier questions in a minute. The ones they
little,
got wrong.
I'm 6'3" and 15 stone, Mary. Hardly little.
Oh, well, I can match you on the 15 stone front. Maybe a little bit more, actually. Right then, Mary.
Yes.
Why was Queegee killed? Queegee, yes.
Was that monkey boy?
Yes.
Yeah,
Mary's
boy.
Question, thank you. Why was he killed?
He killed. I don't remember.
That's no good. Kirby?
He messed up and lost the TARDIS.
Andy?
Because he insulted the Emperor.
No, because he tried to escape. He didn't get that one. Right then. Kirby?
Master?
What does the Doctor play with Kublai Khan?
Backgammon!
easy peasy.
Mary?
Yes?
How was Kublai Khan related to Genghis Khan?
He's the son of Genghis Khan.
Kirby?
His grandson.
Is the correct answer.
Oh,
I right, know my last, Chinese history.
Last question goes to Kirby. Right. Kirby?
Me? Master?
Yes, you. How did Ping Cho get out of marriage?
Her husband-to-be drank an elixir of life that killed him.
Well, that's pretty specific, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes!
Up to the last three questions, Mary was on level pegging. In fact, she was ahead. But the last few things let her down. So, in second place, with 20 points... Mary, and then the winner with 24 points, it's Smarty Pants Kirby.
Now, you're going to ask Andy some of the other
yes, things. But we're playing the closing theme tune to the quiz at the moment, Kirby.
Yes, perfect, Master.
Right then, let's see if I can remember some of the ones you got wrong from earlier. Right then.
It's been 3 weeks since I saw this, so...
Don't start trying going down the Reese Parson excuse bloody front. Didn't keep him in the show for very long, did it?
Where is Reese tonight as well?
In bed, I think. Right then. Oh, there's one they didn't get right. Who did Tigana meet in the caves?
Well, he met Barbara, obviously, straight away.
That was my specific answer.
What word did Tigana use to describe Susan Tomarko in episode 4?
Something rude, I can't remember. Flipping
heck. No. The word was cunning. Why did Marco keep a journal, as he said in the script?
Well, I keep a diary as well. You keep a journey for life, don't you?
He mentioned a reason why he keeps it.
So remember what he did? His old age.
No, it's because it interests him. See, you wouldn't have gone anywhere in this group.
Oh, thank you, Adam. I love you too as well.
What did Tigana say he would let Marco... How did Tigana say he would let Marco die, as in the script?
Very painfully, probably.
No, it was like an old woman in a bed with a stake through her heart.
You're going to drive Andy away.
No, I'm not. I'm just showing that...
Mary, it's a pleasure to be with you people. It really is, honestly.
I think they had it, really. They got most of them right. What game does Barbara not play well?
Well, the Doctor plays backgammon, so he ain't backgammon, yes. And he ain't chess. What is that play well? Oh, no.
You
no
said the word
Adam.
Chess. That was good enough for me. So
yeah, you said chess.
Yeah, you did say chess.
Yes, there we go. That's the quiz for this week. And the amount of effort I went, it's probably the most effort I've ever gone into in writing a quiz.
So
and you were the only two that we bothered to turn up to it, eh, Debbie No Voice Melrose.
Yeah, where's blooming Australian guys? Where are they?
Peace Rotten's in bed, and he's trying to make excuses about
Robert,
going back to uni.
I've actually met Robert. I've actually been to dinner with Robert. Where's he?
He's in bed. He's probably up, but in bed. Sat up somewhere.
And Crystal?
Well, shouldn't it be morning? Isn't it morning?
Well, it's 6 in the morning for him.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, because Robert's in Perth, and Perth is about 7 hours ahead, so that's, it's about 5 in the morning, I think, for Robert, actually, I think, in Perth, because I've actually met Robert and his good lady wife in Perth last year. So it's about 5 in the morning, so it's a bit early, perhaps, for him.
Well, he's online, but he's always online, so you can't guess that if I send him a message.
He told me that his house is very small, and any time that his wife needs to sleep, he can't be on the computer gabbing away because that wakes her up.
Tell you what, this internet connection is quite good now. I've connected it to my iPad. It's over 4G now. It's actually quite it's swinging along.
Mary is actually quite right. Cause I've actually met Robert. Went out there last 2 years ago. Went out to Perth and met them. And yes, it's a small house. And yes, his computer is in the same dining room because they invited us out to dinner with him. Yeah. Lovely, what you know, Adam. Both Robert and his wife, Jocelyn, lovely people, both of them. Had dinner with them. What lovely people they are. But a small house, you're quite
they're
right.
They're not too bad.
Yeah, I wish I could meet them.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah, no, up a plane.
Yes, well, one of us will win the lottery one day and actually be able to make that happen. Because somebody was that's why Debbie's not on the show. I read somebody upset Debbie earlier on when they said about Doctor Who conventions and she said, I wish I could go. And then since then, she decided she's not going to be on the show tonight. I think, who was it posted about that? Oh, it was you, Kirby. What a surprise.
Yes. Well, Kirby, you come to Britain, Kirby, I'll take you to a cricket match. I keep saying, every time, whenever you come to Britain, I'll take you to cricket.
Yes.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
I'll watch cricket. I won't watch football. I'll watch cricket.
You need to broaden your horizons, Kirby.
How about rugby? Yeah. Rugby, cricket, rugby?
I'm not sure. It's awfully violent.
It's not. It's just competitive.
Yeah.
Okay.
A gentleman's game is rugby. Wonderful game. Football is a game played by hooligans. Rugby is a game played by gentlemen. That's different, sir.
Okay.
And football is a game played by girly people who like to fall around pretending they're hurt.
Yes, yes.
But it's still an extremely beautiful sport, and I love it very much.
Actually, it was my first Birmingham football match last night for 2 years.
Oh, dear, never mind. I'm sure you can get some ointment for that.
Well, they drew.
They drew. That's good, then. When you support a team like Southampton, most of our players don't fall around
and
the ground.
When did Southampton last win a trophy?
About 3 years ago.
Four years ago.
Johnson's
podcast.
Paints Trophy, and I was there with Alicia at the final at Wembley Stadium when we took the record amount of fans for one club has ever taken to Wembley Stadium. 48,000, I believe, we took. And there was still... What?
We can beat that, Rob. We can beat that, Adam. When Birmingham won the Leyland Duff Trophy in 95, we took 75,000.
No, that's the old Wembley.
And also Birmingham...
Yeah, but did they all get into the ground?
Yes, and also we won the Carling Cup in 2011. We beat Arsenal 2-1, and I was there. Guess it! Yes, we were there!
Anyway.
I'm ready, Europe. Sorry, Adam. Carry on, please, sir. I'm taking over your podcast. I beg your pardon, sir.
No, I was just looking on the news front. Barry Ingham, Barry Ingham has passed away at the age of 82. He played Paris in the 1965 story The Myth Makers. William Hartnell... interview has been found. A long-lost interview featuring William Hartnell has been recovered. This is news, by the way. Did I say that? Has been recovered from a part of the BBC Good.
Is that the Desert Island Discs thing?
Yes. I haven't heard this yet.
I heard that this morning. He mentioned it briefly about Desert Island Discs. It's about 16 minutes long, because the whole thing should be 35 minutes. They've lost a lot of it. But he briefly mentioned Desert Island Discs. But it's worth listening to. If you go to the BBC website... You can find it on there, and it's worth listening to. So, yeah, go ahead, folks. Go and find it.
Yes,
if you can't find this, let me know. I'll send you it through myself.
Yes, well, just post a link on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Podcast indeed. Facebook group, indeed, which you can join.
Yes.
Right, so that's basically
is that the
news.
20 megabyte
Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join.
Sponsored by who is sponsors, by the way?
I can't remember, Mary.
Who won?
Who won.co.uk?
How about that?
No, as long as
is it who won.co.uk?
Mary can't remember. I went to who won.co.uk there. The hub, it's actually called Who Won the Chop itself the other week, and bought a load of the figures, the Series 4 figures, and finally got my, what they call that thing, 12th Doctor in normal suit, which is now mounted on the top of my Mac with all the other
picture.
Doctors, apart from, I've posted a picture, apart from the War Doctor, which... if you're lucky enough to get a pack with it in, it's £2. But if you want to actually buy it specifically, it's going to cost you about £50. I don't really want to pay out £50 for such a small little thing. But, you want a picture, do you? Where's my iPad gone?
So that's whowon.co.uk, if I got that right, if I remember.
Unfortunately, you can't buy those online. Sorry, listeners. But are other Doctor Who items available at whowon.co.uk, like the Mr. Potato Head Dalek, and the jewellery box, TARDIS jewellery box. And that would have been an ideal Christmas present at £19.99. What do you think of that? Hey, the lovely Dawn would like one of those.
Well, yes. I mean, it's her birthday in June. Yes. July, actually, yes. She'll be 21-ish.
Oh, ish. Right, just
make
a picture. Yeah, sorry, you carry on talking about yourself as well, because I've just been... asked to by Kirby, and when I say asked, that means ordered to. post this picture of my little 12th Doctor figure. Right.
Facebook is taking a long time to load.
I'll stop moaning you. Where is it? No, I can't post it now.
What are you trying to load?
Me?
Just Facebook to bring Facebook up.
Facebook went a bit up the tits up the other week, didn't it?
I heard about that, but I didn't
affect me because I was ill. I wasn't actually doing much Facebook at the time.
It's going slow in this. I mean, I've got a picture of my rugby mate on Facebook. Nothing for you, Adam.
Yeah, it has been going a bit. Those things I've been, what I was weeding at work, when I got home to show my wife, I couldn't show her because Facebook was going a bit slowly. Yes.
Yep. Okay. The lovely Dawn doesn't do Facebook. She does my Facebook account. I find I have posted messages I never knew anything about because she posted messages on my account. Yes.
Right, okay.
Yes.
Right. Figure picture posted for Kirby. There we go. Can you see it?
No.
Yeah.
Hasn't good. Come up yet. No.
That's something for you to look at later.
Oh, hang on. Adam Pearson's posted.
That's me. Yes. Hello.
Yes, Adam Pearson. Yes, a bald-headed guy. Yes. No nothing coming up.
Yeah. I just got my hair's very short. Oh, thank you very much.
The minifigures. Yes. The minifigures. Yes. Mm. Gollum. No. Yes.
Gollum. No. It's not anything to do with them.
No, it's minifigures. Got the minifigures, yes.
Yeah. Now, what are those figures standing on? They look like they're on little...
The top of my Mac. What are you on about?
I'm glad you can see them. I can't see them.
They're on these little blue, look like...
Yeah, the DW figure bases. They're DW figure bases, but the new ones come in boxes. We're supposed to put them in boxes and sort of have them on display, but they don't sit on the Mac so well when they're in their boxes.
I've got a few of those figures I bought several years ago. This little DW base.
Yes.
Well, one on the left is obviously Matt Smith, but who's the one on the right? What's that meant to be?
Hey?
The one on the right. Sorry, who's that meant to be?
I'll have to look at this because I don't know what you're on about.
Isn't that the Capaldi?
Yeah, the one on the left is obviously Matt Smith, but the one on the right,
that's a clanger. Which apparently William Shatner is supposed to be doing the voice for. Yes?
Sorry, I'm looking at a picture here. There's one on the left is obviously Matt Smith with a curly
hair. Oh, you mean the one in the middle?
On the right looks like the Capaldi doctor.
Yes.
The Capaldi doctor.
That is an awful picture, Adam. That really is.
It was taken with my iPad at great
He's saying that it doesn't look like Capaldi.
No, he's commenting on my photographic abilities in regards to holding
No,
not
coming out.
No, he was...
Alan Butcher reckons it's Neil Tennant. Yes, exactly. The Pet Shop Boys.
Yeah.
Nothing.
They've done as good a job as they can with it. Although the hair's a strange colour, it's got to be said. But, yeah, it's all right. You've got the eyebrows. That's enough to make it the The Capaldi doctor?
Master?
Yes.
Master?
Yes.
Have you checked to see if Ian Kirk has sent in his feedback again yet?
No, I'll have a look for you now, Kirby. I don't think you got the message. Never responded to it. Here we go. It's loading up Gmail, and I've got, would you like a penis enlargement? Click here. I'll just get rid of that one. And report spam. No, nothing from Ian Kirk, no.
Although, well, you'll just have to edit it in later.
I have to, do I, Kirby?
Well, I can't possibly do it.
But I've got to, because you say so, and I've got to hold the whole podcast.
Well, it's funny.
Why? But I'll have to wait around and edit in later. I don't think that's very funny.
Yes,
I think it's very awkward,
actually.
That's what I just said. Okay, right. Now we can start on the part of the show we call talking about what we're doing next. Now, what we're going to be doing next is Keys of Marinus. Hey.
Yeah, I've already done mine. You've got mine already, plus wine.
Yes, I've got that. I've got the extra feedback that was played earlier on, and I've got the extra live feedback, which is happening at this moment.
Indeed, yes. It's a pleasure, Adam, to be actually a part of your podcast.
Yes, it's a pleasure to have you here, and if you're not careful, you'll be
sir.
Here more often.
Right, yeah. Watch out. Calling in once, you might end up
a regular person, yeah.
Be very careful, because it could happen again. Anyway, right, yes, next week, Keys of Manners. The reason why I was cheering is because I've already got the questions from the last time we covered it, so that saved me a job.
Does that mean all I have to do?
Look at my notes from the last time, huh?
Yeah, I downloaded the last time we did it. That means all I have to do is listen to that again write down the answers, and then I've got it!
Yeah, but we might do it in a slightly different way, in which we play it in that, what they call that thing with the... The carries water above things in bridges. What's that thing called?
Viaduct.
That's it. Yeah, the viaduct, where you ask one question, leave it blank, ask the next question, you've got to answer the previous question.
No.
That's called viaduct.
Jeopardy style.
I did get a message back actually from Lewis Bailey from the Happiness Patrol podcast. Slightly delayed by a couple of weeks.
Is that the hap?
Yeah, that's the one.
Who's going to go first?
I sent a message on the 22nd of July because he was online saying, "Hi, Lewis, what you up to?" No, that was ages ago. That was 2012. 11th of January, would you like to make a cameo on the 20 Megabyte podcast? On the 21st of January, he replied with, "Sure, when?" Never mind, eh? I might reply to that at some point.
He would be great. I've never met him, but I love that podcast.
Yeah, well, Adam used to be great doing the podcast, you know, the chart order, the penis, yeah. Great. Why not? Why no more? Why not?
Yeah, but we mustn't do that when he's on the show because he might get offended.
Oh, for goodness sake. I think he knows it well enough, doesn't he? It's so
he
obvious.
Has a sense of humour.
Yeah. Go be dumb. Do it, Adam. Do it, Adam.
I might do, yeah. I'm just sending a message now, which is saying record on Sunday evenings or... Tuesday.
Oh, when are we going to record for Keys of Boringness?
Monday. Hang on, I'm writing a message here. Monday. Oh, that's not how you spell Monday. It's got a Y at the end of it. Mornings.
Or said it's not set in stone as we find out who's available and who isn't.
Okay, right. Now, next week, let's have a look at my calendar because I know I'm doing stuff next week. I'm not available on Sunday because... Damn, I can't remember. I'm sure I'm doing something next Sunday. Saturday, I'm not available because I'm filming the wedding.
You're just making that up so you don't have to do something.
No, I know. There's something on next week. But I can't remember what it is.
Debbie will tell you, no doubt.
Yeah. No, there's something on. Anyway, I'm Shrove Tuesday on the 17th. Doesn't seem I've got anything down for that. I'm on the wrong week. Yeah, sorry. Right. Sorry, the 9th of February I'm available on, which is a Monday. That's tomorrow. Moving on. You're confusing me. Shut up, Kirby. Right.
I think we could cram in the Keys of Marinus tonight.
No.
Okay, right. So we've got a choice.
I haven't.
Yes, we could. Keys of Marinus, crap, end of story.
Right.
Bang.
Choice.
Finished.
Yes, exactly.
Find out when Debbie's working. So it's either going to be next Sunday or next Tuesday. I've got a funny feeling that Debbie will be available. Hang on, let's send her a message. And let's pretend we're annoyed with her that she didn't come on the show this week.
We are.
If given a vote, if it has to be on a Monday or Tuesday, I would vote for Tuesday. But
okay. Oh, good. Right.
I prefer Sunday overall. But
Debbie...
You gave me a Sunday, so I'll be good.
Debbie, are you available on Tuesday. What's the date? Tuesday the what?
17th.
17th. Feb. Oh, that's how you spell February. F E B R U A R E. Right, there we go. She'll probably say something like voice permitting. I'm not off the wagon. It's just because I might have glandular fever and you're not supposed to drink alcohol.
Oh,
Andy, wonderful. Andy, why are you on the wagon?
No, 36 days. I came for the wagon on Sunday. On Friday, I came home. I watched England play Wales at rugby and we trashed them and it was so good. Saturday morning, my head was awful. I must admit, I'm supposed to go out running. I've done 6 miles today. I should have gone out running yesterday morning. But I woke up at 8 o'clock. My head was appalling.
Oh.
After 5 weeks without a drink, oh dear me. But I've done 6 miles today after church and a swim as well. I've swum a mile, then run 6 miles. But yes, yesterday morning, oh, my head was awful. 36 days on the wagon.
So just for that matter of interest, Mr. Nunny,
yes?
What are you doing at 10 a.m. on Tuesday the 17th of February?
10 a.m.?
Yes.
I'll be at work.
Okay, well, we can't get you fired.
No, sorry, mornings. I mean, I'm at home office. I can't. Mornings, sorry, no chance.
Okay.
Well, evenings, maybe, but no, mornings, sorry, can't do it,
sir. At some point, next time we record on a Sunday, we'll try and give you advance notice.
Possibly Sundays. I might be on Sunday night, but mornings, sorry. I'm at work.
Okay. Well.
Okay. All right.
Remember that, everybody. Never record on a Sunday again. Right. Yes. Sorry.
The times that we pick tend to be more for we Americans.
Unfortunately, I'm a civil servant. I work for the government, and Sunday morning.
You never know. You might get a holiday. You might be off work on holiday one day.
You never know. Yes, I'm actually off work long weekend next weekend. So it's Monday next week. I do Monday, but
so you can do Monday.
Yeah. Well, if it works out that Debbie's available on Monday, this coming Monday, the day before we're trying to pencil in for the Tuesday, then we'll probably record on the Monday, won't we, Mary? Yes. There we go.
Yeah.
I'll go. Debbie generally works on Mondays, but she might be still off sick.
Yeah, Monday morning. I could do Monday morning next week.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But if not, it'll be next time we record on a Sunday, which may well be the week afterwards. But anyway, that's probably about it. I think I've been sat in this chair for too long, and I need to get into the other room and probably take some painkillers and have a drink and say sorry to the dog who got a toe stuck up his backside just a minute ago when he started barking at a stupid time of night. But anyway, right.
What are you doing sticking things at your dog's backside?
I gave a gentle shove with the end of my foot.
Oh, right, okay.
Yes. Anyway, right. So, anyway, thanks everybody for coming on the show this week. Thanks to listeners and thank you for your patience for hanging around for all these weeks for me to eventually get around to doing the show. Not my fault.
Three weeks between
shows. Oh, shut
shows.
Up, you. And
wow.
I did say, actually, Kirby, on long stories that there will be a 2 week gap between episodes anyway, if you listen. And we will only ever do one story per week. So
my fault. Andy, were you the other person who also thought that we were going to do two?
I thought you were. Yes.
Yeah. Fair enough. But let me explain.
I never did.
When I say about banking them up, I mean getting ahead ourselves so as that we're not sort of trying to rush an episode through watching it before the next podcast comes along. We can have one in the bank. So that's what I meant. But I haven't watched Keys of Mariner yet anyway, so that didn't work for me. Anyway, right. So thank you, everybody. See you next week, hopefully. Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
Be seeing you.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is the trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.